Okay, we'll now take up testimony on Senate Bill 207. The purpose of the bill is to rectify something that happened last year in a bill that was, instead of drunk driving, it was drugged driving. Unfortunately, the wording technically wasn't quite right, and a judge has ruled that now roadside testing, this would be, examples would be the officer asking you to say the alphabet or to count or to stand on one foot or walk a line, those sort of things now have been ruled by a judge that they may not be used in court. The intent was only to keep out the portable breathalyzer results, the chemical test, and not the other commonly used and accepted tests. So that's what Senate Bill 207 does, is simply make that technical fix. I have a card in opposition from the Criminal Defense Attorneys of Michigan. Invite up William Mays to testify.
Thank you very much for this opportunity. My name is William Mays, and I'm the president of the Criminal Defense Attorneys of Michigan. By way of background, I'm also a DUI defense lawyer, and so I've spent 17 or 18 years litigating DUI cases. And one of the things that I also do is testify as an expert witness. I'm oftentimes retained by other defense lawyers to testify about these field sobriety tests. I brought with me here a copy of the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration Standardized Field Sobriety Training Manual, and this manual details the three standardized field sobriety tests. These standardized field sobriety tests date back to 1977, when they were first developed by the Southern California Research Institute. Prior to that time, let me catch my breath here. I'm all nervous. I apologize.
You're an attorney and you're nervous?
Yeah, but you all are an impressive body, you know?
Wow. Thank you. Thank you.
Back in 1977, the Southern California Research Institute was given a grant by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration to try and design what would be the best field sobriety tests, the most accurate, the most reliable, those that have the most predictive value. Because prior to that, police officers across the country were using any sort of field sobriety test that they might make up. Unfortunately, that has remained true to this day in Michigan. Police officers across the state are using whatever field sobriety tests that they might make up, although they're also trained through MCOLs on the standardized field sobriety test battery. I don't believe that this law was actually a mistake. I take the position, and CDEM takes the position, that this law is actually a good law. The problem is do these field sobriety tests purport, or do they accomplish what they purport to try and do? And the answer is that they don't. The unreliable, non-standardized field sobriety tests that have been used historically, those have been abolished, at least nationally, by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration because they were judged to be way too unreliable. The problem is that we've replaced these with the standardized field sobriety test battery, which I will admit is better than these old non-standardized tests, but they're not good enough. For probable cause purposes, let me be clear. For probable cause purposes, these things are fine, okay? And that's what the current law under 257.43A permits in connection with 257.625A. These tests are admissible for probable cause purposes. And I don't, and CDEM does not oppose that. This is a good idea. These things should still be used by officers. We don't want officers falsely releasing or falsely arresting people out on the side of the road for drunk driving. However, in terms of whether or not these things should constitute good evidence that should be admitted at trial, the problem is that even the standardized tests, which are better than the non-standardized tests, the inter-rater reliability and inter-rater agreement and test retest statistics fare very poorly. 0.57 inter-rater reliability, which is almost no correlation. And this is through the various validation studies that are then culminated through to the point where they become this NHTSA training manual. Over in Illinois, there was a case of People versus McCown. It made its way all the way up to the Illinois Supreme Court. And in that case, The issue was whether or not the horizontal gaze nystagmus, an eye test, should be admitted as evidence. And prior to that, it had been back and forth in Illinois. The Illinois Supreme Court took the issue up because Ms. McCowan had been convicted solely and exclusively based upon this eye test. It went up to the Illinois Supreme Court, and there was nothing earth-shattering. They basically followed what we had already established here in Michigan in People versus Berger, which is that if the test is properly performed, it can come into evidence, and the officer is established to be properly trained. However, they reversed Ms. McCowan's judgment because they found that the test had not been properly conducted. It was reversed and remanded from the Illinois Supreme Court, with Ms. McCowan having absolutely no evidence then at the retrial stage as to whether or not she was intoxicated. Now, she might very well have been guilty, but she might also have been innocent. The bottom line was is that there was no evidence to suggest that she was drunk. The problem is that as we fast forward through these things, there was recently a horizontal gaze nystagmus, a robustness study that was put out by National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, where they were trying to counteract what we have been doing as defense attorneys, which is to say that these tests are good, this eye test is, it can be used under all different sorts of conditions, etc. However, what they ended up finding out was that although the test purports to be 77% accurate, when conducted properly, it also will indicate that a person is drunk when that person is sober 77% of the time. And it turns out that when the test is done improperly, the error rate for officers' false arrests, they'll arrest a person based upon the eye test 90% of the time. So the question, and these things remain true for the one-leg stand and the walk-and-turn test. Walk-and-turn test is 32% of people will actually show or fail the test with zero alcohol, and that was one of the early validation studies that established that, with no alcohol whatsoever. So I'm not suggesting that we need to have a flawless test before something can be admitted. The problem is that what really happens in these cases on a day-to-day level is that there's a piling on of evidence. Yes, we've got breath. Yes, we've got blood. But then we've also got these tests. And what does the finger count test mean when it's only a preliminary screen under the NHTSA standards? Nothing has ever said anything here in Michigan. So the evidence is actually highly prejudicial. And the analogy that I've given you a handout, there's an analogy made by a Dr. Greg Kane out of California. He says that metal detectors are designed to detect guns, and they do a very good job of detecting guns, but they also do a very good job of detecting coins and other metal objects that a person might have on them. We would never think that a person should be convicted of possessing a gun if they try to walk through a metal detector at an airport. But the analogy holds true for drunk driving field sobriety tests as well. The idea is that a field sobriety test, a drunk person shows a lack of coordination, so therefore we'll test their coordination with these tests. And then a person who lacks coordination must be drunk. And of course, the example that I also give up near the top is that there are non-standardized tests, take the one-leg stand, that is administered by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, where you're standing with 1 foot raised above the ground, arms at the sides, 6 inches off the ground, etc. If a person is instructed to close their eyes, they will fail that test nearly 90% of the time, just by changing that one thing, by closing their eyes.
Well, you've described a lot of things that you don't believe in. Tell us what you do believe in. What are the standardized tests that you want codified into statute? What are they? What are the ones that you believe work?
The only ones that have been ever established to actually work are the standardized field sobriety tests. That's
And what are those?
Horizontal gaze nystagmus, walk and turn, and one-leg stand. And we have been training police officers through MCOLs for approximately the last 7 or 8 years in these. And I think that they actually incorporated it officially a few years ago into the MCOLs materials. So those are the only tests that have had accuracy and reliability explored. But I'm cautioning you that they should not be necessarily adopted. Let's keep this law as it is. The problem is that this is a brave new scary world for prosecutors, because they're claiming that this law was passed by mistake.
It was.
And that it was a mistake for these judges to hold that the test should not come in. Should they come in, though? Are these tests actually accurate enough and reliable enough, or do they mislead jurors?
Well, let me ask you this. You described three things there that you said you believe do work under the standardized test, the standing in 1 foot, the walking, and the nystagmus. Now, what about saying the alphabet? And I don't mean backwards. I mean just saying the alphabet. You think that's a poor test?
The alphabet was actually explored by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration way back in 77. and it was found to be relatively a decent test. It was ultimately rejected in the final project because of language problems and educational problems. It would discriminate against Spanish-speaking people, for example, but it also discriminates against those that have a lack of education. And then there's also a problem with people who have dyslexia or other learning difficulties.
Okay, but that could be explained easily in court.
There's no explaining in court. Once a person fails a test, they might say, well, you know, I've got a bad knee or I have vertigo or whatever else might come. There's no explaining it. Once that is already in play, this person is going to go to trial and they're going to be it's going to be decided by a jury as to whether or not it proves beyond a reasonable doubt. But there's no explaining after the fact that my eyes were red because it was smoky out.
Well, I can tell you from 31 years of police work and being in charge of the breathalyzer program of Eaton County for at least 5 years that I saw a lot of explanations in court, and I don't know why there'd be a problem with saying my client has dyslexia and cannot say the alphabet. That would be explained.
No, what I'm suggesting, Senator, is that once you're at the point where you're explaining, we're past probable cause. At that point, the question is it admissible evidence? And so insofar as that is concerned, the alphabet actually it violates the Americans with Disabilities unless there's reasonable accommodations made for a person who has these learning difficulties. It should be incumbent upon the government, the police itself, to use tests that are accurate and reliable, and it should be incumbent upon the prosecution to only introduce evidence that is accurate and reliable, instead of making it incumbent upon the defense to prove otherwise.
So, you're saying a disability such as dyslexia would not allow the alphabet, but what about standing on one foot? Somebody could have a disability that didn't allow standing on one foot. I mean, obviously you have to work around these things at the time when the officer has to make a decision. Mm-hmm. I mean, in the person, at least in my experience, over hundreds and hundreds of cases in 31 years, people say, you know, I can't stand on one foot because I have this disability, and they explain it to you.
Correct. And the thing, I'm talking about why NHTSA rejected the alphabet, mm-hmm. not necessarily why I would reject the alphabet.
Okay.
Insofar as what NHTSA has adopted, they adopted the three-test battery, and they said that, and these tests are decent enough tests because they're objective. That's what makes these tests good, is that both myself and an officer and yet another officer should be able to look at the same video, let's say, and say whether or not a person is passing or failing a particular test.
Mm-hmm.
We don't get that with non-standard tests where the clues are kind of made up as they go along. So at least these are objective. Those states that have adopted the standardized field sobriety test battery, such as Ohio, have indicated, in conformity with NHTSA, that when they are being used, then these need to be used with quote-unquote substantial conformity. The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration recognizes almost no flexibility with the administration and the scoring of these tests, although every time that there's a statement made by a defense attorney, they go back and they revise the manual and change just a little bit. But they have, since these three tests have been adopted, they have repeatedly indicated that if the standardized criteria are modified in any way, or if the standard clues aren't used, or if the standard criteria are not used to assess the subject's performance, quote unquote, the validity of the tests is compromised. And so if you're going to adopt a position that adopts field sobriety tests or allows them into evidence, then I would at least ask you to explore the possibility of looking at passing a law that would indicate that these three tests, the standardized tests, are administered in substantial conformity before they can be admitted, especially given light that the fact that the HGN test, when improperly performed, is upwards of 90% inaccurate towards the innocent.
Okay, I appreciate your viewpoint.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I'll tell you what we're going to do. We're going to take further testimony. We won't be voting this out today. And if the same language is attached to a bill over in the House, and if this is fixed, then I will give you my commitment to take up with a panel, and we will decide whether we need to put something like this in Michigan law. We'll at least consider it.
Thank you, Senator.
Very good. All right.
State police are going to speak next, actually. Thank you.
Okay, the state police don't wish to testify, and they're in support.
No, they're going to testify.
Or do you wish to testify?
We can come up, sir, if you want to prepare Sergeant Curtis with
sure.
Mr. Valancourt, whatever's easiest, I think.
That would be great. Bill Valancourt of the Prosecuting Attorneys Association, also.
Good afternoon. My name is Bill Valancourt. I'm the Livingston County Prosecutor, and I'm appearing here on behalf of the Prosecuting Attorneys Association of Michigan in support of Senate Bill 207. Senator, we'd like to thank you and your committee for your prompt consideration of this bill. We think that it corrects an unintended consequence of preventing police officers from testifying about what they witness when they conduct a drunk driving investigation. Generally, evidence of a preliminary breath test, which is known as a PBT, it is and always has been admissible at trial by virtue of a provision in the Motor Vehicle Code and the Drunk Driving Statute in Section 625A. But last year, the reference in that statute to preliminary chemical breath analysis, which clearly referred to PBTs, was changed to preliminary roadside analysis. And when that term was added, it was broadly defined to include not only the preliminary chemical breath test that's given on the road, but also the field sobriety tests that are given by the police officers. And by broadening that definition, it created an ambiguity in the statute where defendants are claiming, and an ever-increasing number of judges across the state are accepting, that this renders all evidence of field sobriety tests inadmissible at trial. It was not the legislature's intent to render such a dramatic change to prosecuting drunk driving cases and to render inadmissible almost all of the evidence of a defendant's impairment and intoxication in a drunk driving case. This is the type of evidence that juries have always heard from police officers and what they expect to hear from police officers. This bill will amend Section 43A and Section 625A to restore the rule as it was before the amendment, so that only the preliminary breath test is admissible. We support the bill and we ask that it be made immediately effective. To the extent that there may be other issues beyond this correction, we're happy to be a critical part of those discussions and to work with the legislature and the criminal defense attorneys in exploring some of these issues, because they can be very complicated and very technical. We're happy to sit down and work with everyone to address what issues that they see. But the correction that's in this bill is something that is necessary as soon as possible, because it is having an impact every day in the trial courts of this state in drunk driving cases.
Good afternoon, Chairman. I'm Sergeant Curtis with the State Police. I have a little over 28 years with the State Police. Since 1993, I have trained officers on the standardized field sobriety test. I will agree with Mr. Mays that they are the best, but as the chair mentioned, you know, every individual, every stop out there is different. The climate's different, the person's different, and where, you know, the standardized, again, is the best, sometimes we have to use something else because the person may be handicapped for whatever reason. Their eyes, they may have a problem with their eyes. We can't do the HTN. You know, we would like to. Also with the alphabet, I've always taught it, that's something the jury can do in the jury box. You know, if you ask someone to recite their alphabet, the jurors can sit there and recite their alphabet to them. NHTSA has put it back in the manual on a page all of its own. They recommend that it is used as a divided attention task, where we will not start at A, we don't end at Z, we start at a different letter, end at a different letter, because driving is a complex task, and that's what we're trying to see here. Can that person divide their attention and multitask? As far as counting, same thing. They do recommend a backwards count now. It's not validated. The ABCs are not validated, but it is a battery of tests that can be used. So, you know, I do support both the standardized and the non-standardized because of a lot of reasons.
For the purposes of the media here, I want to make sure that they understand it's a backwards counting not backwards alphabet.
That is
fiction and does not occur.
Correct. It does not occur. You know, and it's a totality of the circumstances. It's not just the sobriety test, you know, that we count on. It's the odor of intoxicants and, you know, bloodshot eyes. Yeah, people, there's a lot of reasons people have bloodshot eyes, but it's just a totality of all that that the officer adds up and makes their decision to arrest or not arrest.
I agree. Any questions? Senator Beda.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm glad that you cleared that up, that it's not alphabet, because I think I grew up in that generation where I don't think I learned my ABCs without singing it. So for those of you
it's
who learned
urban
it that
legend.
Way, thank you.
Okay, see no further questions. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, I think we have found some good language, and I think that there's a bill over in the House that would take care of this problem in the fastest manner. And if that happens, then you have my commitment to sit down with a group, and we will work on some standardized tests for the state of Michigan. But I do believe, as was mentioned by the state police, that certainly saying the alphabet and counting backwards are valid tests. I used them over 31 years very effectively. Seeing no further business, everybody's here. We're adjourned.